Bonjour, bonsoir, dear friends, and welcome to JCB Live, another live happy hour with a lady I was mesmerized by. And I got to tell you a story. She came with a fabulous friend of Dylan, his cousin, Adam, who drew my sketch, who is this unbelievable and spiritual speaker, and she was there. She was fabulous, irresistible. We got to speak, we got to spend time. I realize she's an amazing author, 2 books, a great entrepreneur. She's a movie producer, and she is very interesting cultural background. First Iraqi descendant, born in the United States. We thought Yasmin had to come, and she's so gorgeous. She's wearing purple today. Don't melt. I know it's one of my favorite colors. I'm very pleased. And if I say Bubble, she's going to come and be with us. So Bubble, Yasmin. Woo-hoo! Ooh la la.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Well, I could not resist not waiting any longer to see you. So we had to do this phenomenal time together. And I forgot to say, you have an incredible podcast as well. And we will be talking about it. But Yasmin, can we have a toast?
Absolutely.
So Yasmin, unbelievable background. And I need to tell you, we're having a lot of fun because we hit it off and we said to Yasmin, you got to come back. Unbelievable woman, incredible inspiration, and what a path. So maybe we go back to birth. Iraqi born in America. How is that? And tell us all about this.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was born in Chicago and, you know, pretty uneventful childhood. My dad is a physician. My mom's an artist. And, you know, it's interesting. I think I didn't know that I was Iraqi until the first Gulf War happened. I came home and there was a lot of shock at in the household. I heard a voice message that had screams in Arabic because obviously bombs were, you know, starting in Baghdad that day. And so I ended up going back to school thinking that everything that I had witnessed at home was contained at home. And then when I went to school, I realized that my parents were from a country that the country that I was born to was going to war with. So it was a really, you know, fascinating experience to have as a young person. I realized also what it would be like to be the other. So the sense of not feeling belonging in my own country, I think, was really hard. So, but it also gave me a lot of compassion and empathy for people who were marginalized in society. So I like learned at a very young age what it meant to die. You know, I jokingly say I feel like I learned about death before I learned about life when I was a kid.
This is well said, though. And it's maybe a great way to learn about life is that way, reversely.
Absolutely. And I think when you realize that, you know, there's a tension in life, meaning that your days are not always around, right? Like that you could die at any time, that you are not immortal. I think you start to realize how you want to spend your time and how you want to live. And so for me, you know, after that moment, I really decided I wouldn't take any day for granted. And that I think I had a sense of compassion. I just wanted to help other people. So it was profound, but also very traumatic to be Iraqi American. And you know, that's not just my story, because I think a lot of people like to say, like, I am just this identity. And I think there's so much more to me than just being Iraqi American, I don't want to get stuck there. Like, it feels like that's a significant part, but that's not really me, you know? But just to kind of move it along. So Chicago, I moved to New York for college. I went to Cornell undergrad. I thought I wanted to be a lawyer. So I followed, I guess, like consensus reality path. Like I wanted to prove that I was worth, you know, something. So I created a sense of external validation.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we all need those external validation at some stage in our lives, right?
Yeah.
So you went to the fabulous Ivy League School of Columbia.
For business school.
Yes.
So I went to business school a couple of years later. So I lived in New York for about 10 years. And that was, you know, a very interesting experience. I think as Elizabeth Gilbert once said, you can only be young once in New York. So I loved coming of age in New York in my 20s. I mean, it was fabulous, fabulous experience. But it was also extremely hard because New York is a place that is a lot about the acquisition of wealth and abundance. You know, the acquisition of maybe there's like a superficial bent to it. And of course, there's theater, there's art. So there's a richness and a juiciness in New York. But at the same time, I think I kind of got lost in the comparison, you know, comparison stream that everyone gets into.
But you were at the same time very successful in your business. So you build success, you created success. Did you feel you were totally caught within the rhythm of New York?
Yeah. You know, in New York, I would say that even though I went to business school at Columbia, I secretly always wanted to go to film school. Sure. So I would walk to Columbia Business School for class. And on my way to business school was the film school program. And I mean, I felt like most of my education in life was about kind of doing things because I felt like they were safe to do and not because I really wanted to do them. I was an artist at heart. And I think that, you know, growing up as a first generation child, as an immigrant, I think you get indoctrinated in this idea that to follow the arts and to follow these paths that are uncertain could mean that you will not have security in life. And I think that's a huge trigger when you're first generation immigrant, right? Because you see your parents and you see how much they fought to maintain a level of security. So yeah, so New York was like not the time that I think I broke free of it, but I was like, there's a part of me that was dying, I think, inside.
Really?
Yeah.
And how did you realize that, and what made you just say, that's it?
So it was interesting because I went to business school. I followed the path. I did, you know, corporate finance. I worked in a lot of corporate environments, but I did, you know, I took these classes at the New School in film. I went to the NYU for writing and kind of like more of my creative exploration. I started a blog on renewable energy. Ooh. I was always like interested in creating things, but I didn't have the belief in myself maybe to just exit stage left until I moved to San Francisco.
But before we go there, so at that time, very successful, of course, you growing up the corporate ladder, you have more responsibility, you still do those classes, you start to create a book.
Yes. Yeah. So actually that was part of my San Francisco life.
Okay. So you decide I'm done, I go.
Yes. Yeah.
How do you make such a decision?
You know, it was interesting. I was actually in Brazil at the World Cup sitting on the beach by myself because I ended up by myself one day. And I just had this moment of realization that, I could continue living the life of a New Yorker, but I also wanted the uncertainty of what was the next chapter of my life. So I got back from that trip and I literally did not renew my contract for my lease. And I was starting to work at a technology company, a startup in New York at the time. And they had an office in San Francisco. And so I just said to them, I'm moving to San Francisco. You know, would you support me on that? And I didn't know anybody in San Francisco. I did not know a single person. I had no friends and I moved there, I think at the age of 30. So, you know, it was a really difficult choice to make because I had built like, you know, my college friends, my work friends in New York. And it was kind of traumatic to completely start over in a part of the country that you don't know.
For sure. So, yeah. You moved west.
I moved west.
So what happened in San Francisco and how did you create this first unbelievable achievement?
Thank you. Yeah, you know, San Francisco is such a special city for me, and I think for a lot of people, because there's so many entrepreneurs in San Francisco and in the Bay Area in general. I think that, you know, the East Coast in New York is built on the foundation of structure and hierarchy, and like you have to work a certain amount of years to get to this certain type of job. And in California, I saw around me, I got connected to so many entrepreneurs and so many startup founders and so many people that were just creating their own life.
Yes.
So it really felt so exciting for me because I felt for the first time in my life that I didn't have to follow this path.
And you felt it was already in you though. Because taking the risk to move west is a big decision for a young 30-year-old lady.
It is. Yeah, it is. And it was really hard for the first 9 months. I mean, I remember going to parties not knowing anyone, you know, and I had such a great network.
Well, I'm sure, if I may interject, as we all witness, the charm, the beauty, and all that comes with it, this fabulous brain, I'm sure it was easy to have a lot of friends asking for your number.
Yeah, it was. It took some time, believe it or not, because San Francisco still, at least when I moved there, it's a city of a lot of people in technology, right? So, you know, the amount of communication that happens is not... It's not the same
It's more behind text and email.
Yeah, it's more behind text and email. It's a little bit more introverted.
I want to toast to this first tranche of your life, which was amazing. Education, born as an Iraqi, and thank you for sharing that, because this was really very engaging for all of us. The corporate life, and now we're moving west. And for that, we have a wine named 76, which is the symbol of the West Coast, the symbol of Napa Valley, the symbol of a wine that won against the French in 1976.
Oh, wow.
It's a judgment, which was called the Judgment of Paris. World competition, and this one is in honor of it. It was in 1976, and the French lost against the Napa Valley American. So, to the honor of the West. And you're going to have to describe this wine before we move to one of the most exciting part of your life.
Okay. So I think to me there's like a sweetness and a richness in it.
Yes.
And I generally like all types of wine.
Good.
So this Good. This feels very soothing. That's what I would say about it. It feels very soothing.
Wow. Yeah. So would it match well your fabulous movie you created? And why? You're going to tell us why. And how did that come about? So you're in San Francisco. You meet a lot of people. You still work for that firm. And then what happens?
Yeah, so a couple things happened. So I left. I had a number of different jobs in the startup space. And, you know, I had been taking film classes in New York. So it wasn't my first time and my first exposure to film. So in California, frankly, like, I'm not going to go into this whole journey, but I went into a place of internal questioning.
Great.
And I just remember actually starting this practice called Morning Pages, where I would write down my thoughts first thing in the morning. And I kept writing down the same thoughts over and over and over again. You know, I'm not passionate about what I'm doing. I don't really want to live this life, you know. And after a while, I just got sick of writing it.
And you were writing the same thing day
I was writing the same thing day after day. And then at one point, I just walked into my office and I said, these are my 2 weeks, you know, and I'm not coming. And basically they're like, well, where are you going? And I was like, I don't know, but I'm not coming back. And then it was interesting because I had no plan B.
Yes.
I had no plan B. And I lived alone in San Francisco.
And that's what I admire in you. No plan B, dear friends. And she says, that's it. I cannot take it. I'm moving on. And I think those are great advice for many of us sometimes, just to go for it and look at the results.
Yeah, it was a leap of faith. I will say that my parents were concerned for me. They flew to San Francisco. You know, they were like, what's happening? Are you having a midlife crisis? Not even a midlife, a quarter life crisis, you know, or so. And I didn't have an answer, but I knew I just couldn't live the life that I was living. So I did the Eat, Pray, Love thing. I went to Bali for a month.
Great.
And then I think what happened was I just started to trust that everything would be all right. Rather than like pushing up against something,
yes.
I just started to allow things to come to me.
And that's the cool thing, is to trust that things will happen in the right sequence.
Yeah.
And did you call this to happen in your prayers, in your meditation, in your thoughts? Do you think you in some ways triggered that path? You know what
Absolutely.
I mean? Because you attract a path. I believe in destiny, but I think you still direct your destiny.
100%. So I think what was the significant change was that I went to Hawaii by myself and I started to, you know, question my relationship as a human being on this earth with everything around me, you know, rather than just live this life where I was in this concrete place and living out kind of like a robotic existence, you know, an assembly line life. You know, going this to this to this, you know, you do this, you get married, you have children, you know, you retire. And I just decided, you know, there's got to be more. And I actually like grew up, you know, going to a lot of different types of religious schools. I went to Catholic school. Mm-hmm. I grew up Muslim. So I had like felt very much also indoctrinated with a lot of different religions.
So and you practice both religion, Muslim and Catholicism today, or? None of the two?
I'm actually just a spiritual person.
Yeah.
I think, you know, once I started to dive into the world of spirituality, which I will get into, I actually decided to join a 2-year program called the Academy of Intuition Medicine. So I graduated from this program right after this path. And I started to experience what it felt like to learn about my intuition and trust my intuition, which is something I think so many of us are taught not to do. Oh, don't believe that. You know, this is what's happening. You know, it's all about logic, logic, logic. And I'm not saying that logic isn't important, because of course we've created great things with logic, but I think we've like completely divorced ourselves from our heart.
Yes.
You know, and our spirit. And
absolutely.
So I found that.
That's amazing.
I found that. Yeah. And I'm grateful.
To succeed, to find that at such a quick and early age, because some people look for that all their lives.
You know, it's been amazing, but it's also been very difficult, you know, because I think that I felt very lonely, you know, when I was experiencing that. I didn't feel like I could really relate to what was going on in the world anymore. You know, people were complaining about not getting a raise, not getting promoted, you know, spending so much of their waking hours in a job that they didn't care about, that they were not passionate about, they weren't excited about. You know, and that was like at best, you know, most people are like miserable at their jobs.
Yes.
And so I felt like, do I want to explain my reality to people? And even if I could, would they believe me?
Yeah.
And so it actually was really difficult for me. I felt very alone during this process. But it's also been extremely rewarding. And I think, you know, in this first like 10 years of my life in New York, I always had dreams about making movies and writing things and, you know, doing all these things. And I never did them. I was always working at a very demanding job and had side dreams, side hobby dreams.
It's well said, side dreams.
Side dreams.
And many of us do. So you recommend to all our friends listening, what should they do about their side dreams? Make it their main dreams?
I think there's a level of just trusting in your own capacity. I think that we are literally using, all humans right now are using 1% of our potential.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that, so people always ask me like, how are you able to like have a podcast, write books, make a movie? And I wrote 2 other features that got into the second round of the Sundance Writing Lab.
Wow, congratulations.
But it's like, I never had this capacity to execute until the last maybe 4 or 5 years of my life. And I think it was because of meditation, because of becoming very present, very grounded, very in tune with what I was capable of. Rather than grasping, I was letting things come to me, but I was getting very clear. So meditation every morning, and just being quiet with yourself. A lot of people can't spend time with themselves.
Yeah.
You know, they,
well, you're looking at one. It's not easy for me, I got to tell you. No, but it's not easy.
You know what, St. Charles? It was the same for me 10 years in New York.
Really?
I could not be alone. I mean, the moment that I had a 2-hour gap in my diary, I would completely freak out and try to fill it.
Wow.
And I remember it took me many years. Like first I would spend an entire Sunday alone. Then I would spend an entire weekend alone. And then I would spend a week alone, you know? And it was like, oh, wow. I got to a place where I was like, wow, I really can spend time with myself and I enjoy it. But it's a different type of experience of life, you know? It's not, it's so funny because I used to judge people that would say things like this to me years ago. Like I actually visited Korea and I went to, what is it called? One of these Buddhist monasteries. And I remember like waking up at 4 a.m. and I just thought like, I thought this would be a cool experience to have, but I didn't really believe it or care for it. And now I look back because I was so judgmental. I was like, who would wake up at 4 a.m. and meditate? And now I look back and I'm like, I get it. I totally get it.
Really?
Yeah. It makes a ton of sense to me. And if you saw me or knew me 10 years ago, you would not believe, you know, the type of person I used to be. I mean, I was like, just going out all the time, partying, you know, I lived a very different life.
That's amazing. Well, congratulations for sharing all that with us. And so we can all do it. You think?
I think it's possible.
So what's the recipe to do it before we move to your phenomenal movie? Because everybody's going to be curious to see it and watch it and enjoy it. But what would you recommend we do if we want to get there?
Yeah, that's so I feel like there's a couple exercises, a couple kind of maybe frameworks that I would suggest. And the first is you can't create anything unless you're in the present moment. So most people live their lives in the past or in the future. They're like always like thinking about once I'm done with this, you know, in 3 months from now when I have this time, you know, there's never going to be a good time, right? Like life is not, people think life is a dress rehearsal. This is the show, you know, like it's live. Like the whole thing is live. This is it.
This is theater. So the lights are on, right?
Yeah, the lights are on. And so I think the first thing is like get really present and stop thinking about the past and the future. Just be here now. Enjoy this moment. You could die tomorrow. You know, who knows? And so I think most of my life, I was not living in the present moment. I was literally in some fantasy reality, you know, or like excited about the next day or looking at my calendar about the next thing. And I still struggle with that now. It's not like it's perfect peachy clean, but I'm at least aware. The other is...
Yeah, that's the key.
Oh, yeah.
You're at least aware. Very well said. You're aware of what you're doing when you're doing it, rather than just going to the next thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Being very intentionally present and aware. And so that's like the first thing is like be present, be grounded. You can put your feet on the earth to get grounded. You can physically touch the earth. We're the only species that doesn't sleep on the earth, you know? So we're so disconnected from the earth as a result of that. So that's the first, one of the most important things that I learned.
Like I love the saying, take off your shoes and caress the skin of Mother Nature, right?
This is
very true. It's an old Indian saying, but I love that. And it's, thank you for saying as well, we're the only species that do not actually sleep on the earth. Well, the birds may be on a branch, but it's the earth.
It's the earth, yeah.
<That's>
I know.
Right.
I was like, maybe they're flying the whole night, but no, they're still, but they eventually land,
yeah.
Right? So I think we're just so disconnected from Mother Earth and nature. So that's the first piece. And nature also just has a calming resonance. So the moment that we're in nature, it's just healing, you know? So I try to spend a little bit of time in nature. Being hydrated. I mean, these are the basics, you know, so hydration, most of us are dehydrated. We don't drink enough water.
Can we say not enough wine? Maybe not enough wine for today.
Not enough wine. You need to drink more wine
if you want to accomplish
your dreams.
Specifically number 76. It's very good for you.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. So it's,
well, let's have a look.
Cheers. That, you know. This is fabulous wine. Thank you.
You were talking about vibration. Did you feel them in the glass?
I did. Yeah, I did.
So the ground, hydration, what else?
Yeah, so having a plan. I think most of us don't have a plan. So I am very clear about what I want to accomplish for the week, for the month. You know, I have a clear intention about what is it that I want to be in the world? Like, what kind of person do I want to be? It's not about checking the box. It's more about... what kind of love am I putting into the things that I'm creating? Because I think that was also a part of my journey. You know, I was able to, once I figured out how to execute, I didn't know if I was doing it for the right reasons.
Yes.
You know, and so being really clear about like, why am I doing this? What does it mean to me? Finding accountability, people that hold you to very high standards. You know, like everyone says, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. My dad was incredibly, you know, instilled a lot of high standards in our household, you know? And I think at the time when I was younger, I was always like, oh, I don't want to do this or I don't want to think about this, but it was so helpful for me.
Yes.
And now that I'm an adult, I look back and it really like, toughened me and gave me the strength to face adversity, to face toughness. You know, I remember sitting by the fireplace as a kid and he would teach me how to balance my checkbook, you know, at the age of like seven.
Mm-hmm.
And I would always get it wrong. And he'd be like, you're not leaving this couch until we figure this out, you know? And so it was beautiful to have that. So have a strong accountability. If it's not your family, find people that you admire and I think that also that's huge. So if you do not think that this type of life is possible because of your friend network, it will never be possible. So once I started to surround myself with people that I wanted to know better because of what they were doing in their lives, that also helped me believe that, oh, it's not impossible to be a CEO or to make a movie or to do certain things. So surround yourself with really good people. And of course, like, give back to others. I'm a big fan of mentorship. Mm-hmm. But if you're like, if you're the person in your group who is the most interesting person, or, you know, you're playing it safe, frankly.
I love that. So now, shall we go in the desert?
Yeah. So,
so dear friends, you obviously hear and understand this amazing, phenomenal, transformative butterfly that is born one way and becomes someone else. Now tell us the life of a movie producer, because you did it.
Thank you. I'm so grateful to have finished this movie. It honestly almost broke me in half. So around,
well, luckily, maybe we're looking at the best half.
I'll send you some pictures during the filming, because, you know, there was, I might have, you know, lost some hair.
Well, it's one of the biggest challenges of all time, creating a movie.
I've done a lot of hard things in my life. Making a movie is probably at the top of the hardest
thing. More than writing your books.
1,000 times harder.
Really?
Yeah. And it's because there's so many different types of people involved.
Yes.
You know, from the acting to the production studios, to the camera, to editing. I mean, there's just so many factors. So it's, so I'll briefly share the journey. So I wrote this film when I was actually in New York. Okay. And I remember feeling so deeply about the film. It's a Pan's Labyrinth take on the Middle East. So if you've ever watched Pan's Labyrinth or A Beautiful Life, it's about a boy who grows up in a war zone. It's the first Gulf War in Iraq, in Baghdad. And rather than talk politics, because I feel like we always get lost in politics, mm-hmm. I wanted to show the perspective of war from the perspective of a kid who uses his imagination to disconnect from the reality of war. So he becomes part of a fairy tale that he reads.
Brilliant.
And he goes into the underworld of Baghdad. And he doesn't know what's real and what's not real. And there's a lot of metaphors. There's a lot of symbolism. And so he gets taken on this journey. And it's also, there's so many symbolic moments in the film where I also wrote it with the intention, I didn't know it when I wrote this, that we are all connected to the stars and that eventually we will all return to the stars with stardust. Mm-hmm. So it was like this, this collective humanity story. And I mean, I cried writing it. I cried every time I read it. Every person who read the film cried, which is how I, you know, and I was able to make it. And by the way, when I say I, like, to make a movie, it requires like 30 to hundreds of people. We had a crew of at least 30 people who are very dedicated to this. So it wasn't just me, and I won't take credit for making the film.
Well, you wrote it and you directed it.
Well, I did not direct it. I wrote it, and then I was the executive producer and co-producer, but I did not direct it. Okay. So we had this fabulous guy named Zachary Kirschberg who directed it, and he's done many films. NYU graduate of the film school. I was like, I don't want to mess this up, so I don't want to be the director on this. But yeah, we raised money from a Kickstarter. We raised a lot of just individual donations to make the movie. And we hired a 7-year-old boy who was from Syria. So it felt very real, you know?
Wow.
And it was amazing and also incredibly difficult. I mean, filming is like 14-hour days. And
where can we see it?
Yeah, so right now it's in the film festival circuit. We actually won Best Child Actor Award at the Beirut International Film Festival.
Wow, that's a big deal.
Yeah, we're so excited. And we won a couple other awards, but we're now getting really into the festival circuit. So we just
We should do a private show one day for all our friends watching.
I think
maybe a very secluded private showing would be fun.
That would be, and I can also send you the 90-second trailer.
We'd love it.
Okay.
So we will play it. Dear friends, look in the next few days. We'll have the trailer. So what are the big takeaways of the movie that you want all of us to really remember and to dive into the movie thereafter?
Yeah. So I think the biggest takeaway for me is that when I was growing up in America, I never saw a movie in which there was an Iraqi family shown, you know, during the Gulf War. It was mm-hmm. always from the perspective of military.
That's right.
We were always either the victim or the antagonist. We were never the hero in the hero's journey. We were never the protagonist. And it drove me crazy because I think that, you know, the media has also created a fictional narrative about what it is to be Arab and to be Middle Eastern. It's not true. Like, whatever we're seeing in Hollywood today, I mean, I laugh when I look at some of these films. I'm like, this is so one-sided.
But why do they decide to be so one-sided? I've never frankly understood because I've been to the Middle East many times. I love the Arabic world.
Yeah.
I love Africa. I love the Middle East. Obviously, I'm French, so we have a, you know, 10, yeah. 11, 12 million people from that part of the world, and we live together. And I don't understand why just one side. What's your perspective on that?
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of different thoughts on this. I will just say that I think it's like a lack of exposure. Most of the people writing movies about the Middle East have never been there. They've
yes.
never had an Arab friend. They've never been to an Arab family's household. They have absolutely no understanding or idea about the Middle East, which is why in a lot of movies depicted in Iraq, we see different dialects. Like, I always laugh looking at a lot of films like, wow, you could have even consulted someone from Iraq before you use Egyptian dialect to make this
That's
movie.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's such an embarrassing.
Striking sometimes.
It's, yeah, it's just, and so I have felt like, you know, but it also is our responsibility as Middle Easterners to tell our story, because if we do not tell our story, someone else will. And that's what we've seen happen. You know, other people are telling our story and other people are telling our narrative. But the problem also, I think, with what I have felt is that we don't prioritize media. We don't prioritize film. And that's a mistake, because that's how a lot of cultural symbolism is formed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was just really tired of hearing that. So I decided to write my own movie. With an Iraqi protagonist. And a family where the mother's love for her child is the same you could see anywhere else in the world. And the boy is a boy that you could identify anywhere in the world. I mean, he's a boy who has an imagination and misses his father, who he thinks is absent, but was unfortunately killed.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a really, and I cry every time I think about it. And I wrote the story specifically because I feel like young boys today, and not just young boys, but men in general, I think, have not been able to sometimes have a father figure in their life.
Yes.
And as a result, there's so much anger and there's so much frustration and there's so much sadness and grief that has not been reconciled and dealt with. And I think as a society, we need to come together as a collective human family and realize that when we take away the fathers in our society, whatever, for whatever reason, you know, we damage the next generation of people. And so we all have a responsibility to this. It's not like, so it's like post-war. Like, I hope we live in a world where we don't have to have war, where we don't have to have like me versus them. And I think also since I've been on the spiritual path, I've realized like, I'm not this Iraqi person. You know, I'm a spirit just like you're a spirit.
That's
And, you know, and we're consciousness. We are
irrelevant of where we're from.
It's totally irrelevant. It's just, we're really good storytellers. So we also make stuff up about how different we are, but we're actually so much more similar than we think. And so my next two scripts that I wrote are also...
We're getting a scoop, dear friends, because this one is already a big hit. It's in all the festivals and being adored by people and loved by people. So now the next two.
The next two, yeah. So I'm hesitant to talk about them because I was, you know, I wrote them and I was like, you know what? I just don't think I have it in me to make another movie, because you literally age like, it's like, you know, being a president, in my opinion, you age like 10 years. And it's just so brutal because it just costs a lot of money to make a movie. But I wrote two scripts. One is about growing up Arab American during the time of 9/11. And it's based on my experience at Cornell. I started Cornell in New York. The month of 9/11, and it was, you know, really difficult to start college at that time. And I wanted to talk about kind of two Arab women who come of age together, who are arch nemesis, who have very different roots from the Middle East. And I just thought, like, because most people don't understand that there's so much complexity in the Arab world. It's not just like all Arabs are the same, right? We have our own nuances, complexities, right?
Probably much more, if I may say.
We're very different cultures. And so that's one. And then the other is called the El Mansour Social Club. And it's about the 1970s Iraq. And it follows two medical students who come of age during the time of
Saddam. Is one of them your father?
I got a lot of, I actually interviewed a lot of people who grew up in the 70s in Iraq to write this.
Yeah.
And it just broke me in half, because I think the world has not yet realized the atrocities that Saddam Hussein has done during his reign, you know? And so like the stories that came out when I was interviewing people just haunted me. And I was like, we need a story and a narrative to capture what happened during this time. So it follows these two students. And in the background, we see this rise of this dictatorship and then like the paranoia that starts to emerge in the collective Iraqi consciousness. So, you know, it's so funny. My friends and family are like, why are you writing these films? Like, don't you just want to live a chill life and relax? And, you know, especially since like it's, you don't want to get involved in politics. And I'm not really interested in politics. I'm interested in telling stories that are underrepresented. I'm interested in telling stories that don't have a voice. Yeah. Like that's what it is. It's like, I believe it or don't believe it or agree with it or don't agree with it. But the reality is we haven't heard stories about 1970s Iraq. Name a single movie that has been produced.
That's very true.
Name other movies that have been produced from the Arab perspective of 9/11. So we just haven't seen those narratives. And I really want to tell that story. It's an interesting point of view. That's really what I'm excited about.
I cannot wait. We will watch them, right?
I mean, probably take a couple years to honestly make
of
them.
Of course.
We'll see. Making a movie is so hard.
But we look forward to at least A Star in the Desert.
Yes.
Because that's ready.
That's done. Yeah.
So besides phenomenal movies, there's books. So do you want to share? I know there's so much, dear friends. And there's other things. So I hope you're on the couch at the dinner table. You're having a lot of wine. You're going to have another sip.
I will.
This. I mean, am I the only one finishing my glass?
Mm. Yeah. So I was going to, yeah, maybe get some, hot chocolate and sit by the fireplace.
Well, we like hot chocolate with a little bit of alcohol in it. Typically, it could be the JCB vodka with hot chocolate.
Perfect.
Or maybe a unique recipe. I'm going to give you a little red wine now.
Amazing.
Because you're going to have to try number 22.
Okay. 22. It's a great number.
Yes. So, books, which is amazing because, you know, you're so creative.
Thank you. It's funny, I care more about the creative process than I do about the final product. So I don't, like, once something's done, I think it's hard for me to, like, then own it and just say, oh, like, let's talk about this. Right now, I'm like, I want to work on my next thing, because to me, that's the most exciting part of life, like,
yes.
Working on the thing. So I wrote this book actually about 3.5 years ago. And I wrote it because I was writing so let me back up and say, I have like three different jobs. So one of them is product marketing. So I'm a product marketing executive. I started my own consulting practice after I left that last company in house. And since then I've worked with maybe 15 companies, you know, or so. And led workshops for a lot of different organizations. I led workshops at the Harvard Extension School and different accelerators. So I've done a lot of, you know, road shows and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so I started writing about product marketing, and I've written maybe like 50 articles by now. And I kept getting questions from people who were like, I need to understand more about go-to-market. How do you create a product marketing plan? How do you do this? How do you do that? And I just thought, there is no book right now on this topic. Like I basically wrote the book that I wanted to read.
You know? It's typically the best way.
It's like, right. It's the best way.
That's why it's a success.
It's actually done very well. And remarkably, I've spent no marketing dollars on it.
Is it the antithesis of what was written in the book?
It's actually, so product marketing is even though you create a plan with like paid marketing,
yes.
Organic is also very important. So what I did is I wrote all these articles, and as a call to action to the articles, like, buy the book. So that was the way, you know, people found out about it.
That's
and
right.
Yeah, it sells every single day. There's people buying it.
Wow, congratulations.
So, it's very exciting.
So now, if you don't mind, besides the books and we're going to list them all so you can get them. I'd like to go back to the Arabic channel you've created and this podcast, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Because this is, you know, a fascination of mine, of course, the Arabic world, always. Beginning of civilization. This is where it all started. And specifically Baghdad, who arguably one of the most amazing city on the planet, one of the most beautiful, before we went there recently and changed it, but what a great place. So tell us about this great new channel as well.
Yeah, so I was in Beirut, not last summer, but the summer before, for a friend's wedding. And I got connected to this team called Hakawati. Hakawati in Arabic means storyteller.
Yep.
And it's a podcasting platform that kind of just emerged. You know, these two guys who are one of the best sound engineers in the region partnered with one of the best technical engineers, and they created this very innovative podcasting platform called Hakawati. And we've basically been building it, you know, from the ground up. And they literally have taken the stage as like the leading podcasting platform in the Middle East region, with an award from Apple as the top podcast of the year.
Which is a huge,
huge deal. Huge deal. So I met them at the time and, you know, stayed in touch with them. And then they had mentioned that one of their shows on spirituality was doing really well in Arabic. And so I've read like hundreds of books in this space, I would say not just spirituality, but like higher consciousness, like you know what I mean? Existential thinking, consciousness, wellness, well-being, spirituality, you name it. And I also did this program for 2 years. And so I always felt like I was living in two worlds. You know, I had my friends who were like really interested in higher consciousness, and then my friends who were very much, you know, in the corporate world, and those worlds never merged.
Never.
I mean, never
for
merged.
Sure.
It was like,
and there's maybe antithesis in many ways, right?
Absolutely. Because your drive and the goals for why you're doing things are very different in life. So it made a lot of sense that they were so separate. It's funny. And I just interviewed Princess Diana's voice coach on my podcast recently. And he talks about how so much of Western society is in their head. So they talk like this. They talk very nasally, you know, but when you're in your heart, you like drop in and you're slower and you're more, you know, engaged and you're more embodied.
Yes, you know, as you are.
Thank you. But so I noticed I was going from meeting to meeting where I was like in my heart and body. All of a sudden I'm in my head and I'm trying to be analytical and talk. So it's very interesting because I think we're forced to kind of move out of our hearts in a lot of our parts of our world. So
you started then Gateways, that amazing podcast. So tell us all about it, because this is one of the most enormous success there is.
Thank you.
So not only just on the Arabic world, but in general.
Yeah. So it's done really well in the U.S. Actually, the top two countries are USA and Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
called Gateways to Awakening.
Yes.
And that's a very big deal, dear friends. If you look for those kinds of topic in your life, which you must, not that you should, you must. We all do and should, right?
Yes, yes. Thank you. You know, it's been such an exciting journey. So I started it about maybe 8 months ago, 9 months ago or so. And it's just been climbing the spirituality charts, especially in the Middle East region.
It's one of the top views in that world. Out of nothing, 9 months ago. Like a little baby, 9 months you come out.
9 months, yeah, that's like what they say is the length of a creative project.
Yes.
So, yeah. So
and there's no accident when we say that, of course. This is an egg table, by the way. That's where we are. The egg shape, the 9 months shape.
9 months shape.
Well, except for a chicken. It goes a little quicker. But you started it. Again, and all of you listening, this is amazing, you know. Serial entrepreneur with great success and great meanings. That's what I love about it. It's not just about creating something to sell and that's it and you move on. There's a true depth to it.
Thank you. Yeah, so I really wanted to create this to be that bridge between those two worlds. You know, I felt like I wanted to make that bridge shorter and shorter and shorter. And I think because we're in this crazy mental health crisis, you know, so many people are facing depression, having addiction issues, and a lot of people taking their life, especially in the last year. And so I really wanted to create a platform, a gateway for people to explore different types of modalities. So we have doctors on the show, we have academics, we have scientists, we have nonprofits, we have people talking about creativity.
Yes.
We have, you know, last week we talked about psychedelics. You know, we talk about a range of topics. But all of it is an invitation to the listener to think about what type of life they want to live, right? And hopefully come away with more questions and maybe more inspiration in their normal everyday life. So that was the intention of the show. And honestly, I've worked super hard. You know, it's a side project that has become more of a main project.
Yes, of course.
And
due to its success, you're being totally absorbed by it, and it's spiritually very rewarding.
It is, yeah, it's very rewarding. I'm so blessed and I'm so grateful to have this opportunity. I mean, honestly, the podcast landed in my lap.
Yes.
So the team you know, sent me the sound recording studio. I trained on how to learn how to record. You know, it was my first time recording these types of shows, and I had no idea what I was doing the first show. So you could see the journey that I was on now after, like, you know, 35, 40 plus episodes. I'm a much better interviewer, but in the beginning it was rough.
Well, we're going to have everybody watch it. Everyone will see it. And this is so exciting. So now what's next? I mean, so much has happened. I'm out of breath. Well, luckily I have JCB22 as the intense, as we call it, tumultuous and intimate wine.
Yeah, it's...
We're going to give you that wine to build greater intimacy with Adam. Not that you don't have it, but...
This feels very rich and nourishing and deep. I feel like these are the tones.
Wow, thank you. Great words.
We love your wine.
Thank you.
Had some last time. We've been huge fans.
Thank you so much. So yeah, what, I mean, it's fascinating, and I certainly don't suggest you should or you ought to forget all the things you've done. We know there's two movies coming, you know, in the making. We know there's obviously this podcast, which is a great success. What is in your mind? What are your dreams? What else is going on?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think at this point, so I actually just got offered a product marketing show. So I'm going to start a video series with other product marketers to talk about how do you create great products and how do you go to market. That's one thing. But
well, maybe you should come to the wine world with that. We could all use help. For sure. Because typically we say, okay, here I made it, I like it, you should like it too. That's about the extent of what we do.
You know, I think the next phase of my life, Adam and I are probably going to take off and go on a little bit of a nomadic adventure.
I love it. So what is a nomadic adventure?
You
just get a car and you drive?
Yeah, you know, that's not what I'm telling my dad, because he, I think I mentioned something
He's
like that
to him,
and he was like, what does this mean, road trip? We're going to be staying in Airbnbs and hotels, you know, effectively, when it's safe to do so. And also renting places out here and there, but we want to explore different parts of the United States and visit some family in the Midwest and see people in the East Coast. So we're gonna kind of be on the road, quote unquote, until we find a new place that we want to settle in. And I'm gonna work on another book, hopefully that will take all the Gateways to Awakening learnings and put them into a digestible format. Because I think for a lot of people who don't like to listen to audio, maybe they like to read or they just want bite-sized information.
Sure.
So really just creating more space in my life and saying no to things. Because I think that I say yes to too many things.
I see.
So now I want to just be really thoughtful about creating space to let new things come in. Because the moment I feel like I've packed my calendar, I know that I'm in a hamster wheel and I'm just, you know, I'm running, but I'm not really... And I think that we don't realize that the exponential growth happens when we pause, you know, not when we're running.
Yes.
And I used to think that if I ran hard enough or if I, you know, achieved more, that I would get more. But I want a very rich life. And I don't mean that in the, you know, money sense. I want like a rich life in every sense.
So
family, friends. And
so I'm going to ask you another big deal question. What do you think is missing in it right now? Besides Adam, of course. But we found him.
We found him. Yeah.
Well, look at you did, and you introduced him to me. So we found him.
You know, I think what's been missing, and which I've been trying to solve for this year already, is mentorship and coaching. Because I've never actually had an executive coach.
Yes.
And so I've signed up for some coaching, and I also signed up for breathwork. Like a breathwork program.
Yes, of course.
So I'm also looking right now for an incredible female mentor, like someone who has walked their, you know, talk, who is kind of innovative, interested in a lot, in the intersection of a lot of different things that I'm interested in, media, film, but not actually less that and more about bridging worlds and creating a more unified place. Like, I am not interested in proving myself in, like, in any way, shape, or form. I think that this entire life that we're living in is meant to give us perspective. That's all it is. I don't think that
And perspective for what? What's the greater thing, if any? As you said, and I share your point of view, the show is now. This is our life. After, do we reincarnate? Do you believe in that even?
You know, I didn't before, but after reading Kevin Ryerson's works, I do.
Me too, in fact.
Oh, really?
I believe in reincarnation.
Sure. Yeah, I think it's a fascinating subject. I do think that, like, the consciousness that we are in, you know, Einstein says energy is never created or destroyed, right? So
That's right.
Where does it go if we die? We don't know. I think we don't know. But I do think that I am more than just this human body. And I think that...
We hope, too.
Yes, we hope. And I think that this life is very short, you know, if you really think about it. And I don't want
to... It's too short to be true. It's too short to be real in many ways. So there must be something else that is waiting for us.
And I think
a new way of looking at it.
I think also for people that have had transcendental experiences, you know, it's an experience, right? So you can't explain it to someone, but there are moments in my life where I have had experiences that are hard to explain, right? And I'm not going to do any justice explaining that now. But I think once you kind of touch something outside of your physical reality, you start to question everything, you know? And I think everyone is on their own journey. I think everyone's in their own path. There's no judgment, you know, I don't actually care whether people believe me or not. I'm not trying to prove anything.
That's right.
It's like, it's just an invitation to be curious.
And that's where you become more believable, is when you detach yourself from the fact that you need to convince someone to believe in something.
Exactly.
Maybe that's the antithesis of product marketing. Are we at a juncture of your life?
It's all coming together. I was like, well, I don't know how all these paths cross, but somehow they do. And sometimes you don't know why. You know?
So maybe in another way, what is really your dream?
Honestly, to have my own media studio, kind of like Oprah, and to just be able to create with other collaborators. I would love to have a team of collaborators to
Great.
Be able to create not just film, but stories and, you know, spoken word stories, books, you name it. Yeah, I would love to have that kind of team. I don't have a team right now. I'm, you know, trying to clone myself, but have not had success as of yet.
It's on its way.
Maybe. But yeah, I'm looking for collaborators. So if there are any one of you listening who wants to collaborate with me, who finds any of these projects interesting, films, podcasts, I'm very open to hearing your thoughts.
Well, I'm sure there is. So now, maybe the last ultimate question of the night, because I know I could go on for hours. I think we just started, and sadly, it's already an hour. Can you imagine? And... You know, the big question we ask, and I know we're around spring, it's mid-March, new seasons, new dimension of nature, new in touch of nature. What would be your big message to everyone out there? What would you like to communicate? Because you bring so many perspective in the last hour, from bicultural upbringing to a true Middle Eastern misunderstood world, to an evolution of the corporate success in America that you've done, living in one place that, you know, somehow confined you to do so, moving west, becoming another person, writing books, creating movies, now having your podcast and doing all that. I mean, this is a lot of great, phenomenal, you know, trajectory that we all admire, we have. And for you to tell us, really, keep going. This is the one life you need to do it and keep, you know, charging. I love it. So as you look forward, as we look forward, what do you want to say?
Yeah, that's a great question. I also wanted to acknowledge you, Jean-Charles, because you have also created such a beautiful life and so many different things. You know, coming to the studio, I was also very touched by this man's creativity, his ingenuity, his innovation.
Thank you.
And also the book that The Alchemy of the Senses, which was a gift to me and Adam. And we read it and we were just in awe and shock and so touched.
Well, hopefully you touch it too.
We did.
It's all about the senses.
We did. We touched it. We played with it. We took things out. We looked in the mirror. We really experienced
the
book.
Thank you so much.
And I highly recommend, if you guys have not checked out his book, go do it. It's incredible. And so, Yeah, so I thank you for, first of all, having me on here.
And dear friends, it was impromptu. Adam was coming, thanks to Dylan. We did our show, and you remember it was absolutely amazing. We'll still give you the link and the date. And there we met, and then we said, we got to get together. And dear friends, you know what is so cool in life is to share great people to you and to all of us, because it's all about people. Mm-hmm. Sharing experience, life stories, talents, and great transcendental enlightenments. And that's what you're giving us tonight.
Thank you, John Charles. I'm so grateful. To just answer your last question about the message, the takeaway message. Okay, so the best thing that I've learned in the last like 5 years of being on this journey is to ask better questions. So rather than saying, you know, I don't know, something limiting, you know, you create a limiting point of view with your question. Like, when am I going to be done with work? When am I going to be done with this meeting? You know, how am I going to get this raise? Like, rather than ask those questions. And I take this actually from this program called Access Consciousness, which is phenomenal. And I was taught this about a year and a half ago, and it changed my life.
Access Consciousness.
And we interview someone from that program on the show. And we ask these questions, which is, how does it get any better than this? How can I have the best day of my life? I ask that question every day.
Yes.
And then I ask like different questions, like, what is the most important thing for me to know right now? Or show me something beautiful, you know? And I just ask those questions and I wait for the universe to deliver, because our subconscious mind is looking for the answers to the things that are in our head. And so I think a lot of people are fixated on limiting beliefs. They think that their worldview is this small thing, but actually there's so many possibilities. And the moment I started asking those questions, things came into my life that were incredibly game-changing. So...
Ooh la la, dear friends, to unlimited beliefs. I love this. So well said. We want to thank you so, so much for being with us, for dedicating the time before this big journey. And we cannot wait to being in touch with you during the journey and to feel and hear what you're experiencing and what you're learning and what you want to share. So, dear friends, a big ovation to a creator, to an artist, to a phenomenal woman, to a great inspiration. Yasmin, thank you for coming.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
What a great privilege.